Today, I caught the bug. Thank goodness, not the bad kind. With zero-cost immunizations and preventative services, I can do my best to keep healthy.
If you are on Medicare or know someone on Medicare, call CareMore at 1-800-965-1217 today or visit our website at caremore.com.
ESPN.com Lakers podcast. I am Brian Kamenetsky of the LATimes.com Lakers blog. Joined as always by a dancing and funkified Andrew Kamenetsky.
I prefer to think of myself as funkerific.
I have no objection to that at all, sir.
Yeah, we switched up our intro music.
Why not?
Yeah,
it's more funky.
Yeah, this would be
a little funkier.
This would be Machine Gun by the Commodores. We had been using the Inagata DeVita by Iron Butterfly.
We like to keep things fresh.
Oh, yeah. The way we're progressing right now, it's almost 2010, and we've just now shifted after weeks and weeks to a song in the mid-70s.
Right. We should be up to date. Like, you'll be hearing your Kid Rocks and your...
In our 2014
Lady
podcast.
Gagas and your what? Lady Gaga probably comes in about 2040 then.
Right, right. Rock, like the really early Kid, like the cowboy song.
Right.
That'll be in like 2015.
Sure. Something to look forward to.
Right. Tune in March when we're doing stuff from early Van Halen.
Right. The weather has changed. I'm not sure if you've noticed.
Yeah, yeah.
It used to be sunny and now it's raining. It's left me, when this happens, when the weather changes quickly, CJ, I don't know if this happens to you as well, I get stuffy. I get a little sinusy. I start to sneeze and things like that.
Constantly.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, it's not just me.
You know what happens? Our cat freaks out. Whenever the weather changes, she just ends up sprinting all over our apartment, just like jumping all over everything.
Is she the way you know that a front is coming in?
Actually, you know, honestly, if I see her
like
start running around,
like
I do.
Like a trick knee or something.
Yeah,
like
I
that.
Do actually pay attention to like, okay, is it going to start getting cold, start getting rainy? What's going on? Windy? It all just wiggles.
Board up
out.
The windows, honey. A front is coming.
I actually feel it.
Down to the storm cellar.
I actually feel it in our cat's knee. It's very strange. I somehow managed to feel inside the cat's knee.
Yeah, so it's...
I'm a good pet owner.
I'm a little under the weather. But what I think is interesting, my wife and I were out yesterday running some errands, as couples often will. And it was really the first day of rain. I don't think it's rained in L.A. for... probably 5 months, I don't think.
It's been a while.
A long time, which is why everything's on fire. Fires are out, which is nice. Now we have mudslides.
You can't have everything.
Right. Ours is not a perfect world. What I love about Southern California, though, I mean, normally the weather is so great, but because of that, people don't know how to handle anything. We're grabbing some lunch at the Zanku Chicken. Delicious.
It referenced by Beck in the song Deborah.
Right. But just really good, delicious chicken down on their West Side branch.
Sponsorship opportunity.
I know. A lady comes in a fur-lined coat with a scarf. This is a full-length coat here. Scarf wrapped around her neck, like halfway up her face. I realize it's raining, and I got a little sniffle and all that. It was still about 65 degrees yesterday.
You know what, though? I don't know.
She was freaking out. We saw like three or four other people in full-on winter parkas yesterday.
I don't know.
Get a grip.
I don't know, though, if you're being entirely fair putting the Southern California label on that, because our mother does that, and she lives in the Midwest.
Right,
if she were here right now, she would be wrapped up in about seven different layers.
But she has the circulation of, like, a lizard in the sun.
I understand that.
When it's hot outside, she goes out and lays on a rock and just lets the sun absorb. She would wear shorts in warm weather
if
she could.
But not to be confused with a salamander, she does not change colors.
No.
She stays the
not
same.
Not as far as we know. Not while we're around.
No.
We have no proof as to what she does when we're not there.
That's her secret power.
I know.
But I don't think it's entirely fair to slap that tag on the Southern California people, but I do understand what you're saying. It is kind of common.
It was 65 degrees.
But it didn't feel 65, though.
It didn't feel 35.
No, but I mean...
It was snowing in the mountains.
When you don't want to get wet, you add extra layers.
it seemed excessive. The coat I could maybe handle. I think it was the scarf wrapped up around her face.
Maybe it was a fashion statement.
It seemed a little much, a little extreme. Yeah. It, or, of course, it's a fashion-conscious society, too, so maybe she was just itching for that opportunity to take her coat out.
Like, yeah, exactly. Really, I mean, you know what? Maybe she's thinking, I didn't get much out of this in the fiscal 2009 year. I want to get my money's worth. I got to start now. You know, I mean, it was, I think, kind of
fiscal
warm.
Fiscal 2009.
I think it was warm through a lot of 2009.
She needs to wear the jacket for tax purposes?
Just to feel like she's getting her money's worth. It's right. Lean times right now.
All right. Well, no, that's fair. I understand. Anyway, it was something that struck me as a little extreme.
Well, you know what? It's kind of like the way Laker fans, they're so accustomed not to, well, some may be accustomed to good weather, depending on where they live, but they're so accustomed to wins that whenever there's a loss, people freak out. And
right.
They do the equivalent of wrap themselves up in a scarf.
It's true. A giant winter coat. Hopefully only 12 or 13 or 14, 15 times a year.
They feel a chill right. coming, and they feel a need to protect themselves.
I agree. So Lakers, there's just been not a lot of news. I mean, there hasn't been much going on. They haven't played since we last recorded.
No. They're coming up in Vegas.
Right. They're going to go there. And then the Staples shootout. I think everybody, this is playoffs. You know what? Finals aside, I don't think there's a part of the season that fans look forward to more than the annual Staples shootout.
I don't even know so much about finals as it is finals game 7.
Maybe. That's probably true.
I mean,
if it doesn't get that far.
Right. I mean, when the Lakers last year, they won it in 5. That was great and all. Don't get me wrong. It was exciting in its own right.
But was it the Staples shootout?
No.
Yeah. I mean, the greatest preseason tournament I think the NBA has.
Without question.
Yeah. I mean, this is good stuff. It's, this year it's got your Lakers, your Clippers, your Bobcats, and your Jazz. Be there or be square. That happens this weekend. The only real news coming out of camp.
I guess the Warriors were busy.
They must be. It seems like everybody's playing the Warriors, too. The Clippers have played them like 7 times. The Suns play them in
Indianapolis. The Warriors actually play 82 preseason games as well.
They're everywhere. They're like Jim Hill. They're the Jim Hill of preseason basketball teams. They are literally everywhere.
Just not as good a hair.
Exactly. The only real news coming out of camp this week, Broderick Turner of the LA Times reports, the Lakers are unlikely to offer Jordan Farmar an extension beyond this year. No Sasha Vujacic-like contract, no Andrew Bynum-type extension or something like that. So Jordan Farmar, after this season, will probably, in all likelihood, be a restricted free agent. This surprises
roughly
nobody.
I'd say including Jordan.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Sasha Vujacic.
I don't even think Sasha Vujacic would be surprised by this news.
No.
Disappointed to see his little friend Jordy maybe go.
Yeah, but Sasha...
Hang around with friends.
These guys, the mere mention of Sasha Vujacic.
Immediately CJ just goes to the computer, brings up the soundbite.
Gotta bring up the
music. We're not even talking about Sasha.
Nope. But we can still talk about Jordan Farmar with the Sasha music in the background.
But you know what? Similar to the no worries tropical vibe going on in the back of Sasha's volleyball dissertation, I think this is sort of no worries for Jordan, at least in the terms of this is not going to throw him for a loop. He probably would prefer an extension.
Sure, I mean, who wouldn't want to be offered, you know, $12 million over 3 or 4 years?
Right, but during media day, Jordan was talking as if he expected not to get an extension.
Right.
He was not talking like a guy planning on this working out, as opposed to like when you hear LaMarcus Aldridge, who, while growing impatient with Portland and the time it's taken to get this extension, you get the sense that he thinks it's going
to
come.
And that they want him to stay. The difference in L.A., there's the way the Lakers are set up financially, there's no way they can offer a guy like Farmar, who is coming off a disappointing season, who hasn't shown that he's going to be a starting caliber point guard down the road. You can't get into bed with him, so to speak, for another 4 years, 3 or 4 years, when you already have all these payroll considerations, all these luxury tax considerations.
And when your team is pretty good as it is.
Right. It's just not going to happen.
You know, I know there'll be Laker fans who'll say, well, you know, what about with Luke Walton a couple years ago?
Those are different
exactly.
situations.
The team wasn't as good and still over the cap. You have to get the best you can
get. But it's
get.
Also, Luke Walton was an unrestricted free agent, not a restricted free agent, right?
He wasn't
restricted. They had the only guys that they could re-sign were their own dudes.
No, I know that.
It's just
but I'm just saying in terms of getting
Andrew Bynum
right
in that situation where they could risk losing. There's no risk in losing Jordan Farmer.
Right, right. But I'm saying restricted, unrestricted, either way. I meant more just the idea of getting in bed long term with a bench caliber guy, you know, somebody that you don't necessarily think of as a starter with that with Luke. That's more I meant, like, or even someone like Sasha the year before, because the team just wasn't as deep. And Sasha was also coming off what might be the best season of his career.
Hopefully it won't be, but, you know, it certainly has been.
I'm just saying that you have to look at the circumstances.
Right. With Andrew Bynum, though, the difference is he was a much higher, you know, much bigger commodity, literally.
Sure.
But, you know, much more valuable commodity that if he didn't hurt himself last year and played it, you know, became a restricted free agent this year, the Lakers could have been in a situation where somebody offered him just tons of money and they would have had to match it to keep him. Farmar isn't going to get that kind of offer from anybody. Even if he has a good season, he's not going to get a massive deal from someone. And if he plays that well, the Lakers are probably be happy to match. So
right. Call it a day.
Right. And then the other thing is by keeping him as a free agent next year, a potential free agent next year, it makes it so they can move him. It gives them more flexibility. You know, they can combine his contract with Adam Morrison if they want to. They can trade them separately. They lose that flexibility if they sign him to an extension. So that's the other part of it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Right. I mean, and there were a lot of not even rumors, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of conversation that Jordan was being shopped during the offseason, which I think is very believable.
Ongoing conversation that he's still being shopped.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Jordan was very happy at Media Day, you know, talking about the way that they turned down a lot of offers, but that doesn't mean that they won't get rid of him. There's a difference.
Right. I think, you know, we both talked about it. There's a good chance that he doesn't finish the season in a Laker uniform. I don't think there's any question about that. So that's something to look for.
Do you see anything in terms of how it affects his play? Or?
No, I mean, if he's smart, he'll go out and he'll understand that if he wants to get a good contract somewhere, the way you do it is by going out, playing well, working hard, and keeping your mouth shut.
Yeah,
so, I mean, if he doesn't do those things, you don't want to keep him anyway.
Yeah,
so
I would like to think.
It's a non-issue. To sign him to an extension would have been dumb.
Yeah, I would like to think, too, especially in light of his period of getting benched last year and having to work his way into the rotation, you would figure he would understand that as well as anybody.
Right. All right, so that's Lakers' small picture.
Small potatoes.
Right, little news. Little news. Big picture, in a more meta sense, the expression, I believe it was Newman, who once said,
Newman from Seinfeld.
Right. When you control the mail, you control information. Well, our next guest right now, to look at big picture Laker issues, he controls information.
And the mail, for all we know.
And probably the mail. I think it's fair to say. At this time of year, everybody loves previews. A great one, if you want to go get your hands on it and have a little bit of time, perhaps, you know, on the porch, in the bathroom, wherever you do your reading, pick up the Pro Basketball Prospectus 2009-2010, but never while on your cell phone. Pro Basketball Prospectus 2009-2010, the essential guide to the 2009-2010 NBA season. That makes sense. Can be picked up. You can order it for $9.95. Get the PDF file at basketballprospectus.com. You can also order a book, a bound version of that, for $19.95. www.basketballprospectus.com. Our friend Kevin Pelton joining us right now. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good. I kind of wish I did control the mail because we're waiting on the proof copy to get it to start selling the printed version and have that available to everyone. But I'm glad you went the PDF route and already had that.
I am too now.
Is there a player on the cover or is it just you guys?
It's a generic shot of a hoop.
Okay. It's Kevin Pelton and a chalkboard.
Would help sales.
So there's no Basketball Prospectus curse or anything like that? If you end up on the cover of Basketball Prospectus, you could end up injured?
Well, I think there might have been back in the day when Hollinger was writing the Prospectus series. Like, I think the first guy he put on the cover was Andre Miller before the season he played with the Clippers.
Huh.
You know, not as horrendous as the SI jinx. It wasn't like he got hurt or anything. It was just a miserable season.
You guys just keep putting, like, Oliver Miller on the cover every year just to make sure there's a curse.
I thought for a second you were going to say that Hollinger put himself on the cover and he got injured, which really would have been
or
weird.
Was cursed.
He had a terrible...
Like that Brady Bunch episode.
Hollinger had a terrible purr that year.
Right.
His writing's purr was just awful.
It's a dangerous line of business, the stag eater. You know, a lot of injuries, carpal tunnel, things like that. You got to watch out.
Right. Well, one of the things that I like about what you guys do at Basketball Prospectus, which again, still free, we made that mistake last year where we thought, you know, you had to like pay money for it. No, go get it for free. One of the things I like about you guys is you explain all these numbers. You know, you're definitely stat heavy and a lot of new metrics and a lot of places people can go to get some of that stuff. But you also kind of take into account what you see on the floor, what happens in the news and all these other things. So it's a good place to go. Like I said, this is a great book for people to read before the season starts. Looking at the Lakers, who, as far as I could tell, reading your preview, you guys thought would be pretty good. The biggest change this year, obviously, the swap of Ron Artest at small forward instead of Trevor Ariza. What does this do in your view? What does this do for the team this year? Does it make them better or worse? There's been some question about that.
Well, I think the biggest thing is we don't necessarily know, and it throws a lot of uncertainty into the equation. Even with adding Artest, because, you know, they bring back everyone else except Sun Yu, who I know will be missed this season.
Deeply.
You know, yeah, the Lakers still have one of the highest percentage of returning minutes in the league. So if you brought back Trevor Ariza and had essentially the same cast, I mean, you'd have a lot of certainty about what you were going to get from the team this year. So Artest adds kind of a little element of chaos into the whole mix. And, you know, chaos isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when you've won the championship already, you know, it's not like, other than maybe, you know, in theory threatening 72 wins or something like that in the regular season, you can't win more than one championship. You can't do better than that. So if everything works out with Ron Artest, you get the same result. But if everything doesn't work out, you know, there is that risk that you take a little bit of a step backwards as compared to last year. And, you know, I think the big question about it is fairly obviously how he's going to fit into the offense. You know, he's a guy who uses a lot of possessions, has everywhere he's gone over the course of his career, you know, granting that he hasn't played with talent the likes of, you know, Kobe and Pau Gasol and Lamar Odom before, but that's a very different type of player than Ariza was as a kind of a complementary piece on offense. So I think that's what, you know, I spend a lot of time in the Lakers essay looking at that and how it could impact the Lakers offense.
Along those same lines, the Lakers last year finished 11 games better than anyone else in the West, but a lot of teams made aggressive moves. You know, Denver essentially retained their team. San Antonio brings in Richard Jefferson. New Orleans brings in Emeka Okafor, et cetera. The Lakers didn't really do anything outside of remain largely intact. Do you think that gap will more or less stay where it is? Does it shrink? Does it actually get bigger?
I think it's going to shrink a little bit, and I think it probably would, no matter what the Lakers did this offseason, just in terms of, you know, San Antonio making those really bold moves to go out and try and win this year. You know, they sense the window closing, and not only Jefferson, but Antonio McTavish is going to be a very nice piece for them in the middle. DeJuan Blair has been phenomenal in the preseason. Our stats have always loved him, you know, whether it be the college guys at Basketball Prospectus when he was at Pitt, or those of us working on the NBA now that we're kind of evaluating how those are going to translate as he becomes a pro. So I think that they were definitely going to close that gap. And, you know, New Orleans, you mentioned Emeka Okafor, and they've also added a lot of depth, should help them out and make them put them closer to where they were a couple seasons ago as opposed to last year. And then you've got Portland, didn't really make a ton of moves over the offseason, just adding Andre Miller, but, you know, their internal development of their youth should make them a threat to the Lakers as well. So I really see this season as being more similar to 2007-08, 2 years ago, when you had a lot of teams in that 50 to 55 win range, but the Lakers had kind of clearly established themselves as the favorites going into the postseason.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. I mean, a lot of it, you know, there's the issue of Andrew Bynum and, you know, what he means and how much that affects the team, and, you know, does that mean two or three more wins or whatever it is? But I think, to me, whether it's you, you know, reading it from Basketball Prospectus or Hollinger or all these other things, the best way I think people who focus on statistical analysis go to tick off Laker fans is the mention of decline for Kobe Bryant. Like, just the slightest use of the D word, as we call it around here.
It's a
especially
dirty,
if they say D League.
It's a dirty word. Yeah, he's going to decline all the way to the D League. Welcome to the Anaheim Arsenal, whatever they are.
Well, they're
gone.
Anymore.
They're gone.
Yeah,
that's true. What do you see out of Kobe? I mean, is he sort of entering that place where he is declining? And then when you're talking about Kobe Bryant, what does that mean to talk about Kobe on the decline?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a lengthy aging process, and we've already seen it in ways that haven't manifested themselves in a decline, just in terms of, you know, like Michael Jordan is the obvious example, becoming more of a perimeter player as he gets older and relying less on the drive. You know, I think the thing that both Hollinger and I and others have picked up on is the fact that last year his free throw rate went down a little bit. It was, you know, the lowest of his career, in fact, during the regular season. So that's kind of a sign that he's spending more time on the perimeter and not getting as many of those easy points at the free throw line that are going to help his scoring efficiency. But, you know, I think you can take it way too far. You know, his postseason PER was the best of his career. He got to the free throw line at a tremendous rate in the playoffs, other than in that Houston series where the Rockets really focused on keeping him off the line and with a lot of success. And, you know, if there is going to be the D word, it's going to be very gentle for the next year or two. I mean, I think that's more of a long range concern that, you know, he's not 25 anymore. You know, he's been around a while.
So those statistics that you guys have in the guide this year of how the Walker is going to affect his scoring, that's not necessarily for this year. That's down the road.
Yeah, that's an exaggeration for it.
I'm kidding. Did you really have? I didn't see that. You didn't really have that in there, did
no.
you? Okay,
no.
Good. All right. Just making sure I read it. I was like, did I miss the Walker?
Conversely, the opposite of Kobe's inability to play basketball in this upcoming season, are there any Lakers that you anticipate making a sizable leap forward, either from like very good to great in the way people may look at Andrew Bynum, or a role player like Shannon Brown or Jordan Farmar, someone like that you picture sort of that next step coming?
Well, I think Farmar is the guy who has the best shot at that, just in terms of even getting back to where he was, you know, two seasons ago when he was a top tier backup in the league and a guy who looked like, you know, the future starter at the point guard before that situation kind of got muddied last year with the fact that he took such a big step back in terms of his shooting and the emergence of Shannon Brown. So, I mean, our projection for him, despite how poorly he played last year, is a lot closer to 2 years ago than it is to last year. I mean, Brown is, you know, an interesting case because, you know, during the regular season, he didn't necessarily show a ton to suggest that he was going to be a great player. But, you know, at the end of the year, when he got into that point guard role, he started to really show signs of that. And, I mean, was, in my opinion, you know, as key as almost anyone outside of the big three guys or big three or four guys to winning the championship last year, the energy that he brought off the bench, you know, his role in that game five comeback, I should say, against Denver in the Western Conference Finals. So I think whoever wins that kind of battle to see a lot of minutes behind Derek Fisher could end up being that guy.
Hey, that point guard position is, relatively speaking, I think for the Lakers, their obvious weakness. It's the only place where you can't say they don't have like a potential all-star or former all-star or something like that playing. Has anything happened in the rest of the league, whether it's, you know, in the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference, to make that matter this year? Obviously, last year they won a championship with the same three point guards. Has anything changed?
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing is, you know, we talked about it last year a lot of in the first couple rounds is the playoffs of the point guard, and Rajon Rondo is doing what he was doing in Boston, and Derrick Rose had these huge games, and, you know, obviously guys like that. And then the finals matchup ends up being Derek Fisher versus Rafer Alston. Which is not exactly too, I mean, as great as Fisher has been as a role player, not exactly two Hall of Famers. So obviously you don't necessarily need that level of play from the point guard position to have a lot of success in the playoffs. You know, I think in terms of answering that question specifically, I think Cleveland and Orlando have both gotten better this offseason, especially in terms of depth, kind of loading up with free agents, you know, Anthony Parker and Jamario Moon in Cleveland, in addition to the obvious addition of Shaquille O'Neal. And then Orlando just had a terrific summer, in my opinion, you know, bringing back Marcin Gortat, adding Ryan Anderson, Brandon Bass, Jason Williams even to compete for a time as the backup point guard. You know, that's in Matt Barnes. So they, you know, that's a team that goes 10, 11, maybe even 12 deep now. So, you know, I think that whoever comes out of the East is going to provide the Lakers more competition should they reach the finals than last year. So I think that that's the scenario where you see that point guard becoming more of an issue if you're going up against a stronger Cleveland, Orlando team or Cleveland in the finals.
I wanted to ask you, over about the last year between the silver showing against the USA, in the Olympic Games and then being such a key role in the Lakers winning a title and then the gold in this year's Euro, what do you think those last 12 months have meant for Pau Gasol, both in terms of, I guess, his career as it's being created and I guess that legend as it's in the making, but also just his reputation? I mean, he's taken a lot of flack over the years for being soft, for not being reliable, doesn't play defense, he's not a leader. What do you think this last year has done for him?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the second point in terms of just quieting all that criticism. I mean, I think I remember the last time I was on the or did a podcast with you guys, that was a big topic of conversation, was are the Lakers too soft and things like that. And certainly you don't hear any of that criticism at this point. You know, I think a championship answers all of those questions pretty neatly for the team as a whole and for Gasol in particular. I mean, you know, his legacy is use that word, is becoming pretty impressive. I mean, you know, if you judge him strictly on the merits of his international career and the also even before this last 10 to 12 month period, winning the world championships in 2006, you know, he's one of the greatest international players the game has ever known. And, you know, as compared to a lot of those guys who maybe had limited opportunities in the NBA or came over late in their career, like an Arvydas Sabonis or something like that, you know, he's also got this tremendous NBA resume to match it, you know, with a couple of All-Star appearances already, probably going to continue adding to that, a championship. You know, he's kind of carving out a unique place for himself in the history of basketball as one of the best big men, all-around big men we've seen in the last, you know, decade or so.
The website is basketballperspectives.com. The book, which is, I think, a great read for serious basketball fans who just want to know everything there is to know going into the season. The Pro Basketball Perspectives 2009-2010, The Essential Guide to the 2009-2010 Season. Kevin Pelton, you can download that for about $10 over at basketballperspectives.com. Kevin Pelton, thanks so much for the time.
All right, I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you very much, Kevin Pelton. Feel all a little smarter after that.
I don't. I'm not even going to fool myself, but if you want to keep living in La La Land, go for it.
I do it every day. Why should I stop now? So to move from the Lakers to the rest of the Western Conference, we looked last week at the bottom dwellers of the NBA.
The
Western Conference.
Remember when in...
We had a bit of a crapapalooza.
The aquariums that we used to have, the algae eaters.
Right. The guys...
They'd sit at the bottom and they'd eat all the kelp and crap that the other fish didn't want.
Right. The droppings.
Exactly. And you know what?
Leftovers.
They were happy just to get it.
Right.
Those algae eaters. They couldn't be pickier.
Right. So we talked a few about, you know, the Clippers maybe as a team that might rise somewhere in the tank, maybe a little bit. Get some real food as it falls down. The Thunder could be a little bit better this year.
They could turn into angelfish.
All right. Now, this week, we'll take a quick look at some of the other teams, you know, teams with a little more relevance, teams that could make the playoffs, working our way back up the ladder. I think we left off at the Phoenix Suns.
The Suns of Phoenix, right. Once the hated rival of the Lakers.
Right, because they kept beating them in the playoffs. They won 46 games last year. I mean, I think people sometimes, when they picture the Suns last year, picture them as a disaster, as a team that wasn't good at all, that they fell off a cliff. They won 46 games, which is the worst mark they've had in a long time. But still, they finished strong in a lot of seasons after they got rid of Terry Porter, brought back Alvin Gentry, or installed Alvin Gentry, you know, who's from that D'Antoni era, started running again, started doing what they used to do. You know, they played better. You know,
and they actually, that
many 18, years, 46 wins gets you in the playoffs. So they weren't a disaster.
That 18-13 mark was actually largely without Amari Stoudemire.
Correct.
It was almost entirely without
him. So they finished the season strong.
Yeah. If they had not had so many problems in the beginning of the season, they probably would have snuck in.
Right. I think the obvious and most interesting thing about them is they've essentially hit the reset button on the Shaq deal. They moved him They went back, like we said, to playing that, you know, 7 seconds or less style with Alvin Gentry.
They kind of called give backs.
Right. They basically said, we screwed up. Let's start over. And, you know, this summer they brought back Grant Hill. They brought back they extended Steve Nash. They're doing what they used to do to make them relevant. I think they'll be better this year, or at least as good. I think they'll make the playoffs, but the problem is it's too late. Like their chances of being important are gone because they don't have the same stuff that they used to have when they, you know, were a real contender for a title.
Yeah, I mean, in particular, we got to see how Amari Stoudemire does coming back
right,
from
but even
the
assuming
ice
healthy.
No, I know, but I mean, it makes a big difference in terms. I mean, without him at 100%, they don't have a prayer of the playoffs. That's sort of my point.
It's certainly a longer shot.
Right. And I think also people are going to be talking about how they work offensively with that 7 seconds or less return and Steve Nash trying to tailor them to their strengths and guide them that way. You're going to end up overlooking that the absence of guys like Sean Marion, Boris Diaw, and Rajah Bell not only takes away weapons from the Suns, you know, weapons that really flourish in that 7 seconds or less. They lost their three best defenders, who I think brought a little bit of balance to that helter-skelter run all over the place offense first priority style of play. They kept it grounded a little bit. And without that, you could end up similar to the Warriors, where you're just really, truly hoping to outscore people, and that's
it. I think there's no question. They weren't good defensively with Alvin Gentry last year. They're not going to be. They were a little better. You know, I think when they started playing their style, they got to be better than they were.
Well, they brought more
when
energy.
They were doing nothing with Terry Porter. They were a terrible defensive team with Terry Porter because they were sort of neither fish nor fowl.
Yeah.
As the saying goes. But.
And they were miserable right. on the court. And when you're miserable, you play with no energy.
So, you know, I think this is, to me, this is the, I have them as an 8 seed. I think they'll get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think they're an 8 seed. I think they'll finish behind the Lakers in the Pacific for whatever that's worth. But.
Way behind.
It's, yeah, I mean, light years. But it's just, they screwed up this window where they could be important. They're in the playoffs, fine, but they're not, nobody really thinks they're going to go anywhere, which is a shame, because they had a great thing and they screwed it up.
Yeah, they were, despite, you know, them beating my Lakers, and it was frustrating to see that happen, they were, objectively speaking, incredibly fun to watch, but they were conceptually very exciting, and the way they lost sight of a lot of what caused their losses in the playoffs, stuff beyond their control, bad injuries, guys like Joe Johnson or, you know, even Steve Nash's nose bleeding uncontrollably and that ridiculous suspension. People that say that their style of ball couldn't have won, I just disagree. I think they really could have won. I think they would have beaten the Spurs in that series had that stuff not have happened. And from there, I'm sorry, they would have destroyed Cleveland that year. They would have killed Cleveland. And it was disappointing to see what could have been a really interesting footnote in basketball history abandoned.
Yep. So, yeah, 8th seed, but the days of the Suns really mattering are done. All right, moving on. The Utah Jazz last year were probably, if there is such a thing as the most disappointing 48-win team ever, it was probably the Utah Jazz. I mean, this was a team that a lot of people expected.
We'd have to call the people at Elias. To
right.
Really know
I mean,
sure.
It's a little subjective. To be perfectly honest, this kind of judgment, fairly subjective.
I don't even know if Kevin Pelton could figure that out.
No, there's no formula. But the Jazz last year were expected to challenge the Lakers, push the Lakers for the Western Conference. I think a lot of people thought they were very capable of that after they gave them a strong showing in the playoffs. You know, it was a good series. Not, you know, last season, but the season before. Clearly didn't happen. They kind of had a Clippers-esque run of injuries that took them out of their game. I mean, Deron Williams played 68 games. Carlos Boozer played 37. Andrei Kirilenko played 47. Andrei Kirilenko, AK-47, played 67. Matt Harpring played 63. Mehmet Okur missed 10 games and so on and so on and so on. Missing Williams, I think, at the beginning of the season was particularly tough. I think that got them off to a really bad start. They just never got it together. I saw an interesting stat on the Basketball Prospectus season preview, something we will get to later this afternoon, this show. The core, the Williams-Boozer-Okur core, spent 427 minutes the entire season on the floor together. The season before, they spent almost 1,700 minutes together. So it's fair to say Utah never had their team on the floor, and they suffered for it.
Yeah, I agree. I just, unlike you, I'm just not that impressed with them at full strength.
You're just not that into them.
No, I'm not. If they were, you know, if they were Jennifer Aniston and I were Ben Affleck.
He's just not that into you.
The connection wouldn't happen. Although I gotta be honest, if the Jazz were Jennifer Aniston, I would at least be looking more.
Right.
But before I got married, honey, before I got married, if she's listening.
She's not.
I know.
Nice save.
I know.
Because that was gonna be some serious marital problems right there. This is going to come off the rails before it really even got going.
Particularly because my wife is firmly on Team Jolie.
Right.
She is not on Team Aniston. She does not. She calls her Maniston.
Wow.
She does not like
Take
her.
That, Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, ouch. That'll hurt.
Yeah.
I think at full strength, they're a team that obviously you can't ignore. They're too good to just, you know, poo-poo. But I don't think they're really that great a team. I think they're good, not great. I don't think they represent a true threat to the Lakers at all.
Well, I would agree with that, but I think they're a much better team if they get everybody healthy and everybody's playing, even if Carlos Boozer maybe not isn't happy, but just plays hard, plays like a guy who maybe wants to get out of town. And I think, you know, understands that the best way to do that is to play well.
He'll get a nice little push.
Right. They can accommodate that. If they have all these guys on the floor together, I agree with you, they're not as good as the Lakers. They don't have the weapons to take the Lakers out in the Western Conference, but they become a much stronger contender. I think they, you know, they go back to being a mid-50s team. That's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're only defining a pretty good team as a team that can beat the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, there may not be another good team.
No,
in the
I understand
Conference.
That. I'm just saying I think they have a lot of hole. I think, you know, they're not for a team coached by Jerry Sloan, and whenever you're coached by Jerry Sloan, people automatically assume you're very tough and rugged. They're not very good defensively.
No, they're not.
All.
And that's what's going to have to fit. Their slip last year from, you know, the defensive team that they were 2 years ago to the team that they were last year was pretty big.
I've never been
no interior
I've
presence
never been a big
at
Carlos,
all.
Yeah, I've never been a big Carlos Boozer fan at
no,
all.
No, I think with good
I
reason.
I think he's a fairly empty 20-10 guy, and I think he's really out for himself. You know, to me, the most interesting aspect of Utah's season, for me personally, isn't even what they'll do as a team. Because like I said, I think they're going to be good. I just don't think in the end they're all that relevant compared to some of the other ones. I just find the whole Boozer, I'm in Utah only because I couldn't get a better deal opting out. And you know that because I said I'm looking for a better deal to opt out. He's really made himself out to be kind of a paid mercenary. Yeah, I don't think he really even pretends to have any loyalty whatsoever to a team that he plays for. He's like a permanent free agent. And it's just interesting to see a guy that had been pushed for so long as a franchise face not even be affected by that on any level. And the fans seem to despise him now.
I don't think, yeah, I think some of that though is fixed. If the team wins, if they play better. Carlos Boozer is never going to be elected mayor of Salt Lake City. I think that is...
He's not even going to get elected alderman.
Right. I think that's fair to say at this point. If the team wins, though, if he plays more than 37 games, if they get on the floor, they look again like a mid-50s winning, you know, team, and he produces, he's not going to be popular, but I don't necessarily think that's going to, you know, scuttle their season. They need to get guys on the floor. And what we'll find out this year is if that defensive decline that they had last year, because they were a very good offensive team 2 years ago, I mean, very good. And they were actually pretty good last year, despite missing all those people. We've talked about it all the time. It's really hard to play defense when you have no continuity.
Without question. Without question.
Again, the Clippers last year were terrible, in part because they had bad defensive players, but also because they'd never seen each other before. And so the Jazz, they had no continuity. You know, I think you can, I'm willing to give them like sort of a reset button, hit the reset button on last year. If they continue to slide, then yeah, they're done. I mean, then they need to figure something out, blow it up and start over. But I think they still have a very good chance of being the team that they were 2 years ago. And I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. Alright, so we'll see about what happens with the Jazz. I mean, it was clearly they were a different team. The Lakers beat a much different team last year than they did 2 years ago. It was a much easier
team. I agree with you.
There's none of that interior toughness, none of that physical toughness. They just sort of rolled up and went away. If there was another disappointing team in the Western Conference who still made the playoffs, still won nearly 50 games, it was the Hornets down in Nolens.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they had a lot of people with a lot of high hopes for what would happen to them last year, that they could make, you know, a leap and take the next step, push teams in the Western Conference, maybe get out of the conference. There were a few people here and there thought they could come out of the conference and go to the finals. Clearly that didn't happen. They were a team that lost a lot of steam over the course of the season. And by the time the playoffs rolled around, nobody really thought they were going anywhere.
No, they looked like a very disconnected team. By the time they entered the playoffs, they sort of backed in. And, you know, they had a lot of guys injured over the course of the season. Basically, that's been the problem for New Orleans the past several seasons. They can't ever stay healthy.
Right. They didn't do much this summer. They brought in Ike Diougu. They drafted Darren Collison. The big move that they made, they swapped Tyson Chandler, sent him to Charlotte for Emeka Okafor. That was their big move. I think it makes them better. I like that trade. I think Okafor, in almost every way that matters, is a better player than Tyson Chandler. Probably the only thing Chandler does a little better is, you know, run that screen and roll with Chris Paul where you get the alley-oop. But Okafor is plenty mobile. He does that well enough.
He's a little bit better of a shot blocker.
Chris Paul, yeah, probably a little bit. Okafor's a better defender overall.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's more mobile. He's better on screen roll.
Chris Paul could probably perfect that play with us. Figure out, you know,
you gotta lower
the like
goal.
8 foot rims.
You gotta
or something
lower
like
goal.
That. He could probably figure out a way to make us look good on
8 foot rims.
Seven. 7 foot rims and a trampoline.
I was gonna say, you can't
Six.
Dunk on a 7 foot rim.
Yes, I can.
You can dunk on a 7 foot rim.
Yeah, of course I can. I don't even necessarily have to jump to dunk on a 7 foot rim. Not much. You could dunk on a 7 foot rim. You could dunk on an 8 foot rim.
Okay.
Trust me.
Okay, maybe I'm not spatially thinking this out.
No, you're not. I mean, 10 feet, like, think about it, like, what can you touch? If you go out to the basketball court and jump as high as you can you touch the net?
Yeah, I can touch the
net. Right, so you can dunk on an 8 foot rim.
Okay, alright.
I'm not, you know, maybe not one handed. But, yeah, I have full confidence that you could do that. So you, me, CP3, we get an 8 foot rim, and we get out on the floor, and we get going. He could make us look good with that play. You know, I don't think my man crush on Chris Paul is a secret. I think he's awesome. I think he's the best point guard in the NBA.
When you put that misconnection thing on Craigslist,
it really drove it home.
That really made it obvious. You've got a man crush.
My status, my Facebook status says married but still looking for Chris Paul. Things like that.
It's complicated.
Right. Because of Chris Paul. The problem is, The Hornets are shedding talent. They're getting rid of players. They're not spending money. They sold Rasul Butler for nothing, and, you know, he wasn't great for them last year, but he's still useful.
Right, and in particular, when you've got wing players like Mo Pete and Peja Stojakovic having disappointing seasons, you may need
them. They just don't have enough players to make Paul matter. If Paul missed 5 games next year, 10 games, They're cooked. I mean, they're basically screwed at that point.
Yeah, his rookie season, I remember thinking, I'm not sure I'd ever seen a team more wholly dependent on one player.
Right.
I remember likening it to when Melrose Place was awful, and then Heather Locklear showed up and was automatically incredible. That's the effect he had. They were lost without him. People talked about a few years ago how much the Lakers needed Kobe, and they did, but my God, did
right.
The
I mean, I think in the current
Paul.
League, there probably isn't a player, you know, on a team that matters, a playoff caliber team, that if, you know, you take Kobe away from the Lakers still probably win the division.
Well, they definitely win the division.
Right. They're still a mid 50s win team, or a low 50s, whatever.
Assuming
everybody else is healthy.
Yeah.
You take Chris Paul away from the Hornets.
Garbage.
They are bad. I mean, you look around, they've got David West around him, who I think is a good player. You know, he's, I don't know if he's ever going to be an elite power forward, but he's a very good player. Okafor, who I think improves them, like I said. And then after that, is Peja Stojakovic any good anymore? He was terrible last year. Is Julian Wright going to develop? Is Marcus Thornton going to give them anything? you know, is Darren Collison going to contribute? Well, I mean, he plays the same position as Chris Paul.
Is he going to be able to contribute enough that Paul can get a rest at the very least?
But I'm saying, you know, the one place where they maybe brought in another good player is the position where Chris Paul is going to take most of the minutes. You know, Hilton Armstrong up front, Earl Barron.
Still a great name.
Great name. One of the best in the NBA.
Hilton Armstrong is one of the best names in the NBA.
Yeah, you just sound rich.
Yeah.
That's a rich sounding name.
It is. I love
Hilton Armstrong. Of the Martha's Vineyard Armstrongs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just summer with Hilton Armstrong every year.
It's so nice. Sean Marks, I mean, Mo Pete, okay. You know, James Posey was disappointing for them last year. They just don't have enough guys. They are as good as Chris Paul can make them. And if everybody's healthy, he can still probably make them into a 50-win team.
But he's got no help.
But he just has no help. Okay, so where do you think they end up? I mean, I think they get back over 50 wins if everybody's healthy. Seven seed, maybe. Six seed, maybe. I guess they could get as high as six. I don't see them going higher than six.
I think if things go very well, maybe a fifth seed. Otherwise, I'm going to say six just because I think Houston's going to drop out, and Phoenix feels like an eight seed to me, and I don't know if like the Clippers are ready to make that type of jump, or, you know, some people are talking the Thunder surprising everyone. I think it's sort of,
right, but I think
it's slow down.
Right. I think Utah, though, jumps over New Orleans this year if Utah is healthy. I think that's where they switch.
Okay,
spots,
so right? Six seed. I'll say
I
six.
I have them as a six at the highest, seven more likely ahead of Phoenix.
Okay. So you're saying a six or a seven seed.
Right, but I'm much more solid with seven. If I had to put my money down, I'd say seven. If I could put your money down, I might say six.
Okay. Well, either way.
All right. So that's the Western Conference. We'll keep looking at the Western Conference as we get closer to the season. Okay, so we talked Lakers with Kevin Pelton. We talked Western Conference.
The middle section.
With us.
The meat inside the sandwich.
Right. But not the good part of the meat. I mean, I think you figured
the bologna.
Meat, in a sandwich, you think the meat is the good part. This is like, these are like, they're not the bread. Which, well, actually, sometimes they're more like, they're not the lettuce. But they're kind of important but forgettable.
They were an olive loaf sandwich on really good bread one side.
Yeah, well, you know what? This is something we'll marinate on over the course of the week. We'll come back next week and decide where these teams are in the sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair. With that out of the way, I think it's time to do something we did not get to last week. It's time to open up the mailbag.
The Twitter mailbag.
Any kind of mail. Cable bill. Anything. Whatever you have. This song drives home the point that we are about to read mail.
Ironically, though, no mail actually delivered by a postman.
The air conditioning just came back on. It had gone off, and I was dying in here. It's much better.
Yeah,
it's way better. I can feel the breeze. But yeah, the mail. We get mail. People
we
send
do.
Us mail.
Although none delivered by a postman.
No. Twitter.
Twitter, email, comments
on the blog.
On the blog.
Right. People can email us at thecambrothers@yahoo.com. A
but
lot of ways
they cannot mail us at home because I'm not giving out my home address to any of these freaks.
Nope. We'll give out CJ's. That'll be the same. We had a few we didn't get to last week. We apologize. Sometimes the things just get away from us. We have so many things to talk about that mailbag, Twitter or otherwise, gets away from
us.
And
we're busy men.
Right. First question, kind of a comment on the blog, not the Twitter, the blog.
The Lakers blog.
The Lakers blog at the LA Times from Ben.
Ben.
I wish we could get more insights, Ben says, into how PJ thinks and coaches. It makes me cut him more slack when he doesn't. It makes me cut him more slack when he doesn't call, quote, appropriate timeouts during the season in the playoffs. Like many of us want the Lakers to crush opponents and win every game possible, this does not seem like PJ's goal at all. He has the same method to his madness and wants things done in a methodical progression, basically building to the playoffs and going for the ring.
That's just crazy. That's just
maybe
nuts.
I'd be able to watch it with less frustration this year. Probably not, but he does have 10 rings. Here's what, okay. Ben, I think, represents the contradiction
Ben,
that a lot.
Ben.
That a lot of Lakers fans.
For those who don't understand this.
I mean, come on.
Well, just
if you make have
sure.
to explain it, shame on them.
The Empire Strikes Back.
I mean, come
when
on.
Luke is wandering around Hoth by
right,
himself.
You shouldn't have to explain that.
I know, but
shame on the people who don't get it.
But just in case Ben is listening, I don't want Ben to think we're making fun of him.
If Ben doesn't, first of all, Ben heard that. Ben has heard that. People have come up to Ben, well, I don't care how old he is, if he is in school, people came up behind him in the hallway and went, Ben! Oh, Ben's here at the party. You know, they call him on his cell phone and go, Ben! And then just hang up. Ben has heard all this before.
Okay, all right. I just, my bad.
I'm just saying.
Okay, my bad.
I understand. I mean, you want to help the people, but shame on you for not getting this one if you don't.
Ben, by the way, being Ben Kenobi. Just to really drive it home.
He was Luke Skywalker's tutor. I think Ben, what Ben's getting
Darth
at here
Vader
is,
was his father.
Yes.
And Leia was his sister, which and really made that kiss and crush gross.
Weird, yeah. And Ben was Vader's tutor as well.
You know what? One out of two ain't bad.
Right. You know, the whole thing is very interconnected, which I think was the point. But anyway, again, Ben is like, he's got this contradiction that a lot of Laker fans share. Ben is not the only one who gets frustrated by this sort of thing at all.
No, we hear it all the time. Constant. Every live blog, you know, we live blog during the games. We hear this all the time.
Right. Here's the thing, as Mom would say. If you know what he's doing, and he's right, the idea is to, you know, to you call timeouts at certain times for certain reasons. You know, sometimes you want to give players the opportunity to work through problems themselves so they don't become dependent on the coach to bail them out of every issue.
Or dependent on Kobe.
Right, whatever it may be. If you know that's what he's doing, and you know it works, and it does, he's got 10 rings.
It may not work every single time, but if you're playing the percentages,
right,
it works.
Why let yourself get frustrated by it?
I mean, look, there have been occasionally times where I thought he should have called timeout. I remember during...
But that's with every coach.
No, I know that. I'm just saying there are... My point is we're not telling you every single time you think he should have called timeout to check yourself. There are obviously times where...
Sure.
He, you know, both of us have written he's made a mistake. I remember during one of the Houston games, we both thought he let it get way out of control.
He's not God, Andy.
Right, exactly.
He can make mistakes. At most, he's a God, not the God.
Exactly, exactly. But by and large, if you play the percentages, there is a method to his madness that has been proved legitimate.
It's not even that mad.
Well,
at this
whatever.
Point.
I'm just saying, if you want to think of it as madness,
right.
Whatever. I mean,
I'm just saying, it's like, he's not that. So much of like what Phil does, I think it's, look, he does approach things differently than a lot of other coaches. I think he treats his players differently, gives them more leeway and, you know, approaches things in a different direction. Obviously spends more time on like deep breathing and, you know, things like that and meditation than, say, Lawrence Frank.
He hands out way more books
right.
than most coaches.
But generally speaking, a lot of what he does is the same. They run practices, they teach, they do drills, they run their offense over, they walk through things, and they, you know, it's not like Phil is this guy from another planet who, you know, does things with the Lakers that are so out in left field that it's impossible to wrap your head around.
Well,
he's a
from another planet.
Coach.
He just doesn't do things that
right.
out of left field.
That's true. I have no proof that he is not an alien.
You have
of
not
some
seen
sort.
His birth certificate.
I have not. He could be one of those V people. like one day we're all going to be at practice. He's going to peel off his face and it'll be a big lizard face underneath.
One of us better be at that practice.
I hope we have the film.
I will be so mad if one of us happens to
miss
that
practice.
Recording. We probably will.
And then there'll be, you know, we'll get a call from somebody be like, hey, were you guys down at the at practice today when Phil exposed himself as a lizard alien person? No. Sorry.
Oh, you guys always protect Phil. You're always in Phil's corner. You won't expose that he's
a
lizard.
I'll report that.
Yeah, but we'll be protecting him somehow.
If
like we are right now.
If Phil turns out to be a lizard, I will report that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can criticize the guy. He makes mistakes. There's no question. But I am officially totally on board with the idea, have been for a while, that big picture, he is a phenomenal coach. He's one of the best coaches in the NBA. The only guy I might trade him for or would be happy if they traded, the Lakers made the trade, would be Greg Popovich. Other than that, I think every other coach is probably a step down.
Yeah, and some of this also, too, with the timeouts gets blown out of proportion, I think, because of the whole Zen Master image and people wondering what's going on, but, you know, what devious underlying plan does he have with all this? Sometimes it's just, I don't want to call timeout here.
Right.
It's that simple.
The Lakers have very high standards for, Laker fans, I should say, have very high standards for everything. So, you know, I understand. All right, last question in this week's mailbag comes from Marty2634. It's good to hear from Marty 2634. I've been getting tired of Marty 2983.
Yeah, that guy pushy.
Constantly. I mean, it's just like, answer my questions. So welcome back, Marty 2634. Where would you both rank Kobe Bryant with the greatest players in NBA history when his career is over?
Why don't you ask me this question when his career is over?
I can't answer that question. I like when people give me a very easy out to what otherwise would be a very complicated question. His career's not over.
Right. And drives me nuts when everyone starts trying to compare him to Jordan or, you know, whose career is going to be better, LeBron, who's got, you know, like 17 years left, or
right.
Kobe, who's got about another seven. Shut up.
I have no, well, I mean, don't tell Marty 2634
to shut up.
Be nice.
It's so tired.
Here's the thing.
Why do we got to figure this out now?
I think right now, if I had to guess, and I do because Marty 2634 is making me, Kobe Bryant goes down probably as a top 15 guy. I think in the grand scheme of things, I think of all time.
I think he's already there anyway.
Right. But he's in that range. Is he in the top 10? Maybe. Is he in the top 5? Maybe. I mean, it depends on how many rings he gets. It's hard to compare guys from different eras. It's hard to compare guys on different teams. Different eras, different positions. I will say, I do not think Kobe passes Jordan in the all-time two-guard list. I think Kobe will never be able to reproduce the statistical achievements that Jordan did when he was in his prime. And that's going to keep him ahead of Kobe. You know, when you add in the rings, Kobe might end up with another ring or whatever. But I think when you take the total package, it's going to be hard for me to see Kobe passing him. Does that make Kobe fourth? Does that make him seventh? Does it make him better than Magic? I don't know.
Well, I mean, what's interesting to me, though, and where I think fans get... I mean, I understand that it can be fun bar debate, and it's fun...
It's a lot of fun.
Right, whatever. But where I think fans start taking it too seriously and get too caught up in it, when you say, like, he's never going to pass Jordan, you know, that he won't, you know. Do you mean that with you personally or with the media, this conglomerate that's apparently two people
who
make this official decision?
Well, I am the media.
But there's no official list.
I think.
According to who?
I think in terms of the general consensus among fans and among media and among whoever is in charge of making these lists. Michael
Jordan.
But
nobody is.
Right. I think the general consensus will always be that Michael Jordan, in my opinion, deservedly, will finish his career as a better player overall than Kobe. There are always going to be people who disagree.
Sure.
And that's fine.
Most of them we call our listeners.
Right. Most of them are people who are going to write me angry emails. What I don't like about it is how if I say that I think Jordan is going to finish his career better, and I just did, I'm on record. Can't take it back.
Actually, we totally can. It's not live. Right. We could erase this.
We could do whatever we wanted. That is going to be interpreted by me, or by some, as me hating on Kobe. I'm not giving him enough respect. This is the part that drives me nuts. If you want to say you're hating on Kobe, if you constantly harp on, you know, he's a ball hog, he's this, okay, fine.
You keep bringing up Colorado right. 6 years after the fact.
Fine. If you want to say he's a bad guy because of the whole thing with his maid or all that, you know what? I can understand the whole haterade thing there. Fine. If you want to say that he's the seventh best player of all time or the 12th best player instead of the third best player or the first best, you can't have a conversation about this without a level of respect that totally precludes hating on anyone.
Well, but that's where, I mean, you and I both feel this way. The whole haterade, hating, you know, that part of the culture, sports culture, and, you know, and I think a lot of ways pop culture.
Right.
That
and
has
I think
evolved,
and I, that's something that happens on our blog and through things a lot, I think is fostered.
And that has evolved over the last 10 or so years. It's ridiculous because hating on somebody has turned into basically just, if you do not declare somebody the best at something ever, you hate them. There is no in between.
I hope that we can start to kind of come a little full circle on these things so we can have these sort of really fun debates and make it fun with the understanding that if you want to debate Kobe and LeBron, it's like who is amazing at like 180% and who's amazing at like 179%. Who cares about the difference? You're just recognizing that both guys are great. So
yeah.
We'll see. I'm not holding my breath.
Oh, it'll never happen.
All right. Speaking of guys who are not holding their breath, Steven Jackson wants
actually out. he is actually
until he
doing
turns blue.
He is doing the equivalent of holding his breath right now.
No, he is, but he's showing up to work. Steven Jackson wants out. of Golden State a lot. Really wants to leave the Golden State. Doesn't want to be a Warrior no more.
No. When you say Warriors come out and play, he'd rather just sit
right
in the corner.
Yeah. So, but, you know, after his serving his 2-game suspension in the preseason, which I'm sure is a 10-year veteran, tore him up inside to miss those two preseason
actually
games.
But you're wrong to some degree. We'll get into that. And that bothered him.
Well, he likes to get paid.
Right. He got suspended for fans. I'm sure a lot of fans know he had a little tiff with Don Nelson during the preseason game at the Forum.
Right.
It was basically the only exciting part of that game.
Right. 5 fouls in 3 minutes.
Other than the Shannon Brown dunk, he had like another one. This was the most exciting part. 5 fouls, got mad at Nelly for not taking him off the floor, screamed at each other, went into the locker room in the first quarter, never came back. I don't even know if he was still in the building.
Yeah, to me, like, I want to know where he went. And more importantly, what I really want to know is who gave him a ride.
Right. Did he call a cab?
He's probably got friends in L.A. I mean, Steven Jackson, you figure, knows somebody in L.A. who's probably at the game. Where does he go? Did he go back to the team hotel? Does a PR person drive him there? Does he go to, like,
a bar?
The bar? Does he go to, like, you know, one of the food places around the Forum?
You know, it was still pretty early. He could have gone to a mall and shopped.
He could have gone to the Clipper game if he wanted to.
Yeah,
was playing at Staples.
A lot of options.
Those are the things.
And Baron Davis are buddies. He could have watched his friend Baron.
Those are the things that intrigue me. You know, but he's back now at practice. He's going to play. He's going to be a good soldier, sort of.
Goodish soldier.
He's going to be a soldier. Or at the very least, he's going to be in uniform. He has given up, though, his captaincy,
which is unheard of.
He doesn't want it anymore. Steven Jackson, in reading a bunch of media outlets, but this is from the San Francisco Chronicle, but a bunch of outlets up there in the NorCal. He requested.
Hella media outlets in the NorCal.
Yeah, he requested to have his captain duties removed. Quote, where he goes with this argument.
It's so great.
I'm going to read all the quotes because all of them are worth hearing.
We could have done actually a Steven Jackson podcast.
We really could on just this whole thing because he goes from being alternately right and somebody who has a point to somebody who completely misses the point and back and forth
to somebody who can't even figure out what his point is.
Right. The point is I want to leave. But anyway, here we go. Quote number one. Quote, I don't want these young guys to try to follow me, Jackson said. I can't be a role model to guys who make the same amount of money as me. We're all in the NBA. I don't want to be a role model.
You know what? I heard that was originally the copy in Charles Barkley's we're not role model commercial, right. And it did not test well.
Right. It's not that he doesn't want to be a role model. He just can't be a role model to guys who make the same amount of money.
Actually,
he can, like, kind of guide Stephon Curry? He makes more money than Steph Curry. Right.
He actually makes more money than most of that team.
C.J. Watson? Morrow?
He makes more money than, other than, like, Biedrins, I think he makes more money than everyone on that
team. I think what he's saying, Andy, is that we're all men here. We're all men. We're all in the NBA. I'm no better or different than any of these other guys. I don't want to be their role model.
Well, he does say, I think everybody is responsible for themselves, and that's how it should be.
That's a good message of personal responsibility. I agree. You know what? Kobe Bryant, I think he's the captain, isn't he? It's either him or Fish. I don't remember.
Yes, he's a captain. What do you think he was? Like ammo?
But they have more than one?
Yeah, they got a couple.
They have two, Fish and Kobe, right?
Maybe Lamar.
Okay.
Lamar might be, but I mean, if there's only one, it's... Yeah, it's Thomas Kalati until he gets cut.
Well, I mean, good for him. Ricky, look, the minute I found out Ricky Davis was the Clippers, Players Association rep, all bets were off. I don't know who gets elected to what anymore. That's a great message of personal respect. You want Kobe to be your leader and all these things, but if you need Kobe to make you work hard, you've got problems in the league.
But don't you?
Steven Jackson has an excellent point.
No, but. Yeah. Oh, Jax. Oh, Jax. And then, but like I said though, Steven Jackson, you had brought up that he didn't really care about missing a couple preseason games. I say, nay, Brian, you're wrong. Because the man is a competitor, he's a fighter, he wants to go out there, and he didn't like having his money taken away.
You get docked. You get your pay docked.
Anytime somebody takes $150,000 from you, your relationship is going to change, regardless of who it is. I have to agree.
CJ and I have barely spoken since I took $150,000 from him the other day.
Yeah, and I know every other day somebody takes $150,000 from me. That's a person I put off
right.
my Christmas
card
list.
It makes it hard to be friends with that person.
If my mom took some money from me, I'd still love her to death, but I'd still be upset about it. He, being, I
Jackson.
Guess, either
oh, no.
Don Nelson
okay.
or maybe Larry Riley.
The GM.
Yeah, someone like that. He's
Chris Cohen, the owner.
Yeah. He's not my mom, so you can imagine how I feel.
So, I mean, you know, he says things like...
It makes you think there could be some hurt feelings.
Right. You got to control your own game and what you do. Anytime I say something and get suspended, I don't blame it on coaches or teammates. I man up, take it, and am responsible. I think everybody should be responsible for their own game. I like that. Steven Jackson is a pillar of personal responsibility.
That's retarded.
Kind of is.
I mean, I agree. It's hard to get too... I don't condone what Steven Jackson is doing, but that place is a disaster.
Well, you know what, though? If it's a disaster, and I think it's fair to say that it is not Steven Jackson's fault because the man is remaining flexible, and I quote, if they want to send me home and pay me, I'm fine with that.
I'm an idiot!
No question.
No, that's not. That's quite smart.
If
everybody wants to get paid for doing nothing.
If they decide to send me home and still pay me, I'll still be playing basketball somewhere. What, the rec? Where are you going to be playing? If they send you home and still pay you, you're actually playing basketball nowhere, Steven Jackson.
Right. What's great?
That's not going to stop. This is not the only team in the NBA. You can only play for the one that's paying you, Steven.
Right.
I don't know if you're aware of the rules. You can't latch on with, say, like the Cavs just as an unpaid intern.
Right.
You can't do that.
Along those lines, Tim Kawakami, who is I think a very good columnist
yes, he
up
is.
There in the San Francisco Bay Area, I believe works for the San Jose Mercury, not the basketball team. has a really fun column up today about, and this is the 14th of October for those of you who just can't read my mind. Along those lines, he's noting the worst. The 25 fireable offenses committed by Warriors president Robert Rowell in the last 18 months. 18 months. 25 fireable offenses. Number one is giving Steven Jackson a 3-year, $27.8 million extension last year when Jackson still had 2 years left
right.
on his deal. This is the deal that Jackson said that, well, I mean, I'm sure I won out, but I'm not stupid.
Right. A lot of people don't realize, you know, they talk about his extension. His extension doesn't kick in this season. It kicks in next
right.
season.
So good luck getting rid of that.
Oh, man.
That's like walking up to, somebody and, at a singles bar or whatever it is and listing the diseases that you have.
That you still live with your mother.
That you're
unemployed.
Bankrupt.
You're
all these other things.
You're something of a serial killer in your spare time.
Right. What do you say you and me, we get out of here and go have some fun?
Have a little dinner, see where it goes.
You're going to get shot. You're going to have to pay for it, though, because as we discussed, I'm bankrupt and have venereal diseases.
And you're going to want to turn away from me as we're eating because my mouth has a few sores. A lot of people don't like
right.
looking at that while you eat. Your place or mine.
Right. You choose the place.
Yeah.
This is not a good situation.
Bear in mind, the whole thing with Steven Jackson is winning.
Right. All right, so those are the Golden State Warriors.
Whether I'm mistreated or not, I still have to go out and play basketball.
Crack is whack.
Yeah, I mean,
he's the place is a mess. It's sort of one of those, at least periodically decent message or okay message or tolerable message, bad messenger situations. He's not the greatest advocate for this sort of thing.
It's just so, yeah. No, I mean, I get why you'd want to play for a better team. Who wouldn't? But I think it is safe to say that Steven Jackson in the last year has attempted to have his cake and eat it too.
He's not stupid, Andy. He's not going to turn down that extension. Well, Who would do that?
It's a lot of cake.
Who would do that?
It's a lot of cake.
He didn't go to college, as he said, but or graduate from college. I forget what the exact quote was, but he's not stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's them.
That's the Warriors.
Final thoughts? CJ? Andy? No? Andy?
I think Steven Jackson pretty much set it all for everybody.
Yeah. As long as you're taking personal responsibility for your work and you don't look to the captain of the production team to make you work hard, everybody should come out there and take care of their business. That's the 7-10 motto, right?
Couldn't have said it better myself if I wanted to.
And I don't wait for Drew Belzer to give us a rally talk, because he's like, I just recorded a great In the Crease podcast. You guys get off your hindquarters and make it happen.
No, we make it happen on our own.
Exactly.
And in the spirit of what Steven talked about, and it's made me think a little bit, that $150,000 that you took from me the other day, keep it.
Sweet.
Keep it. You and I will keep working together as professionals.
It's already been spent.
Big man, Andy Kamenetsky.
Next week, we will have a few more preseason games to talk about. We'll have more Western Conference previews. We'll have the results of the Big Staple Shootout.
And we'll reveal a little bit, unlike the motto, we're going to reveal a little bit of what happened in Vegas.
It's not going to stay in Vegas. All right. Until then, we will see everybody next week.
Later.